And now, to share his experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Yana.
Hey everybody, my name is Yanush and I'm an alcoholic. You'll pardon me for wanting to stand. I realize that the one thing I can't stand a lot of time at meetings is when I can't see the speaker. And I also feel like it's possible I might be able to communicate a little bit better if I'm not sort of, I feel like I hide behind the table in a certain way when I've shared before. So hopefully what I lose in humility points I gain in being able to communicate a little bit better. I just want to say that you know, something really amazing is that today, oh my God, that guy's here. Something really amazing, I'm going to be doing a lot of pointing and shouting out today. No, I'm just kidding. Something amazing is that today something really intense and personal happened to me, really hard personal experience happened today around 11 o'clock. One of those sort of like big life-changey things where I call everyone I know and I'm like, oh God, and they're like, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm processing, it's okay, whatever. And I think I was, and this is, it was clear, it was sort of coming yesterday, and I was going to ask our speaker picker, I was going to say, listen, can you find someone else? I know I'm supposed to speak tomorrow, but I know I'm going to be, you know, just, I don't think I can do it. And I tried to find someone else, and then finally, when it actually happened this morning, I was like, wow, I guess this is it. And I just sort of, it became clear that the stars had aligned that this happened to happen today, and I happened to be asked to speak at my home group on the same day for whatever reason. And I'm really, I think that the amazing thing is that like that thing that happened today doesn't really matter. It's not the most important thing that's in my life, and it doesn't matter if it's life-changing or really painful or whatever. It's, this program has become the most important thing in my life. And if you're new and that sounds culty and crazy and, you know, brainwashed, if you want to prove positive this is not a cult, come to any one of the business meetings and, you know, someone with 5 days can raise their hand and share it just like somebody with 15 years. And there's no cult where a hierarchy would work like that. And there's, and it wouldn't work very well. Right. And, I'll say on that same note is that I'm not the voice of AA. I'm just a voice of AA, and I'm just another alcoholic, and I happen to be on this side of the table tonight, but that doesn't mean anything. And earlier this morning, I was calling as many people as I could to say, what do I do? How do I apply the principles of this program to this situation? Because I don't know how. Because you forget constantly, and that's the premise behind a lot of the work that we do here. And I'm also a little discombobulated, so if I lose track, please just, I don't know, like wave your hands or something like that. Something that I was struck by working with Sponsi recently was this thing about how he talked about like, what do I share in AA? What do we talk about? What do we do? You know, what is this thing? And something that's been amazing for me is to realize that where AA came from, that a lot of people who are new and first coming and visiting, feel that, or think that AA is a series of meetings where people get together and talk about some stuff, something not quite sure, and hang out and don't drink. And it's basically like a sober club, and that's the premise of the program. And something that was really powerful for me was to learn that actually, way back in the olden day, some people found this crazy system by which people can not drink, people who are desperate alcoholics who are dying to not drink. And they printed it out, and they put it in book format, and they didn't know what to call it, so they were like Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll just call it that. And so then they would get together and talk about this book, and talk about the principles in this book, and how these principles can make you free from the pain and suffering that we have. And so people started jokingly calling, they're like, you know, hey, Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know, et cetera. So they started labeling those people Alcoholics Anonymous. So they'd say, let's get together and have an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Right, but the premise of those meetings was not for people to talk about how their cat scratched up the back of their chair, or how, you know, like, or whatever, or the fact that, you know, or anything, any life trouble, any blip on the radar screen. What it was to talk about is the fact that we've had a spiritual awakening as the result of this program, and that has made it possible not only to not drink, but to be able to be free and be able to live a life that is beyond, you know, beyond the wildest dreams is the cliche, but something bigger than anything we could have imagined we could have had before. Now, for me, if the spiritual awakening language scares the shit out of you, it scared the shit out of me, and I came in this program, I thought I was an agnostic, I realize now I was an atheist, and what I feel really lucky about is that I found this meeting. And I've come to find over the years that this meeting has an incredible balance of strength program and steps and doing service. And at the end of that, there's also nice fellowship, which is cool. But that's the nice thing is that that's not the central reason we're here. And if it were, we'd be fucked. It would be like eating all of your food at the Quickie Mart or whatever. Like, you're not going to get the thing you need there. And it's just, it's not the reason we're here. It's a nice byproduct, and we're lucky that we have it. Where the hell was I? Oh, right. So I used to drink alcohol. So I'll just quickly qualify is that my first drunk was when I was around 8 or 9 years old. It was at a party, funneling beers, totally awesome. You know, like beers, funneling beers in the basement, which is like one of my favorite pastimes. And house parties was big. House parties. And so I was 8 years old. I got super wasted and was like, my sister displeased me. She said some things that, did not suit my fancy as like an 8 or, I mean, yeah, I don't know, somewhere around there, 8 or 9, something like that. And what that meant was the feelings that I had inside suddenly came out. And I was like, you know, fuck you, blah, blah, blah. Like, and I was just like really like went crazy yelling at her. And there's a room full of people and everything. And everyone just sort of like looked and was like, this little 9-year-old, you know, totally taking, you know, taking down my sister, you know, taking her down a notch. And, you know, I think the thing that I learned in that moment was that you can have a sense of an experience of emotional freedom that I had not experienced or had been sort of blocked up at that point. I still think, when I think back on it, I'd had relative freedom up until about 4, maybe 5. I could still remember being like, yeah, you know, like I grew up on this like little hippie farm and, you know, running around naked, like with like weaving dandelions into our hair, like pretty idyllic childhood. So I don't blame my childhood that, you know, for the fact that I have alcoholism. But so, the point of it all is that that was my first drunk, and I realized that there was a degree of freedom in that, and I think that that was a really powerful lesson, and I took that lesson for a long time and ran with that and had a really good time. And that's the fact that drinking was fun, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that drinking was fun. And like, if I could, I mean, someone said at this exact place once, which I thought was amazing, she's like, if I wasn't an alcoholic, I would drink every day. Which I thought was really stunning, because if you drank every day. Okay, but what I also, what happened around that same time is that my sister disappeared from our family. My sister disappeared from our family and went away, and I didn't know what happened. And one day, it was the day we were going for the trip to Plymouth Rock, and she showed up, and she was in the nurse's office at my mid-grade school. I don't know why she's there, and they send me into the office with my sister, and she's like, okay, I'm basically, and a little of this is information I learned later. She had been excommunicated from the family, right? Because she explains to me, she's like, okay, here's what happened. I realize I have alcoholism. I was a binge drinker. It didn't look like a normal alcoholic because I was sober, doing well in school, and then all of a sudden I would have these really intense bouts of drinking and, you know, et cetera. And so I have alcoholism. And she's like, the reason the family is so crazy, right, is because your father also has alcoholism. And that was, I was like, you know, I was 10. So I was like, you know, okay. Duly noted, right? And something she explained to me then, and I can't remember if it was then or some other time, but basically she explained this thing, which is that she's basically like, I have alcoholism, and it's something that's in my body. And you one day may have alcoholism as well, right? And if it comes to a place where you've crossed the line physically in your body and you have alcoholism, you can never go back. It's a line you cannot uncross. Right? And the way I describe it to people who are new is that if you have alcoholism, you take one of your hairs and you clone it, the new you will have alcoholism. Like, once you cross that line, there's no way back. Now, I'm still a little kid, and I'm processing this, right? And I processed this through my teens, and I was like, I got it. And I knew that at some point, if I crossed that line, there was no going back. Now, the thing about that was that there was something really powerful about that because my sister had this incredible life. She did whatever she wanted. She was like, I want to be financially independent by the time I'm 33, and then she did it. And I want to blah, blah, blah. I want to be the head of this company that they don't want me at all, and she was just like, found a niche and became the head of the company. And, you know, it was just like these things that I was just like, how do you do this? Like, I don't know how to brush my teeth. Like, what are you talking about that you want to be financially independent? Even the thought of that was just like mind-boggling. And I would ask her, how is it that you did this? What is it that you did to do this? And she would say, it was AA. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, hey, you know, which way is the store? And she was like, giraffes. It was like, there was no connection there between one and the other for me. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I ignored that for a really long time. And I grew up in that place, in this small town. And it was fun growing in a small town because it was like, you know, we were punks. And it wasn't like mall punk, like, you know, dyed green hair. We would make explosives. And we would be so in jail. It's so beyond, like, we were those kids, right? We would make explosives. We would blow things up. Our plan was to take down the system. We'd dress all militaristically and go out at night and find ways to break into places and steal stuff and really plan for, like, when it happened. And actually, this is mildly related, is that I remember I was in middle school, and they were doing a thing for Les Miserables. They were doing like an advertisement for the play at my school, and it was the high school was doing it. I was in middle school, and they were all on the stage, and they're doing this thing, and I was like, okay, whatever. And all of a sudden, the back door gets kicked open, boom, and all these people run in, and they're like, revolution, revolution, and I was like, yeah, and I like half stood up, and I was like, oh. This is part of the performance. And I was sure, I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I've been waiting for, you know, for the X long, right? So, that was my upbringing. And then, so I really lived this way where I lived where I was against the world. It was me versus the world, and it's this thing where I realized, like, over time, I was like, well, what happened to that struggle that I had? And I realized, like, I must have won, right, because the struggle's gone. Like, I haven't looked back in a while, but something happened, right? And that process that happened for me was the program, right, was coming in here and changing, taking the steps, doing this process. And something that struck me at a certain point in the program, and this is when I was later in my teen years, I used to go to the local college cafeteria, and I would hang out. And I would hang out with the kids, and I'd go there a lot and play magic cards and whatever. And it was awesome. And at some point, someone was like, oh, what are you doing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, what do you do with your free time? And I was like, oh, I go to the college. I go to college, and they were like, cool. And I realized, like, I could say, I go to the college, right? And one can go to the cafeteria at Columbia, right? You can eat there. You can eat there every day. And if people ask, you can say, I go to Columbia, right? But there's a difference between that, right, and attending school at college, right? We can see that there's a difference there. There's a difference between saying, I go to AA, and that I do AA. There's a difference. And I don't judge that people. That was cool. I'm glad I was welcomed in that college. I'm glad people who are here and aren't prepared to do the work or don't know how to ask or whatever. People need to know that they're welcome and that this is a place where you can come if you don't know what to do and you want to stop drinking, you don't know what to do. But the transformation that I see in people happens when they do the steps, when they do the work. That's my experience. And I've seen a lot of people. I don't go with the idea that people who are in the program and have not done the steps, right, are not alcoholics. There's some people who believe that as an idea, that they don't have alcoholism. But I think you actually can have a low-grade spiritual experience just through osmosis, just hanging around and just a little bit of, like, trickle-down, you know, recovery. You know, things are a little bit okay. You get a little advice, it's good, you know, whatever, right? But the suffering I remember that suffering from, like, you know, when I was like 4 and a half, right? At that, there was this moment when the pain started. And it was just, it was, it, and that's when the me versus the world thing happened, where it was just, there's something inside me that is alien, that I can't connect with other human beings. I don't know how. There's no way for me to do that. And what I've come to find over time is that this program has this systematic way to remove that, to get me outside of that for a little while. It works for a little while. And the reason I've found over time, right, that works for a little while is that our brains are hardwired. We do one thing, we do it over, we do it over, we do it over. Our brains make a shortcut. And they say, you know, fuck this, like, long route through reason. Things are good, I drink. Things are bad, I drink. Things are whatever, I drink. It's just like, we're just going straight to drink here. You have a feeling, drink immediately. And so my brain becomes hardwired to do that. And you can rewire your brain over time through repetitive action. However, those really deeply entrenched parts of our brain, that without that repetition, you just go back to the old behavior. And that's what happens in this program. They say, well, why do you have to keep coming to meetings? And the thing is, in the end, I'll just revert to my old way of thinking. Over time, it's just sort of this dark poison seeps in, and I'm just like, man, fuck these people. I don't want to leave my house. This is gross. I'm just going to be on the internet for 9 weeks. You know, like, I'm going to want this search will solve my inner turmoil. Like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. I was an atheist, and I was raised. And the thing, I was raised an atheist, and when I was a kid, I fancied myself an agnostic, right? Because my parents were Catholic, and nothing I say right now is, again, the opinion of AA. This has been my experience. My parents had been raised in Poland, and during the World War II, fighting Nazis, all that stuff. And not my parents, my grandparents. And so my parents, and then, you know, subsequently my grandparents, and subsequently my parents were atheists, and like hardcore second generation Polish Nazi hunting atheists. Like, right, this, you know what I mean? Like, this is not a joke. So I, at that point, even my rebellious streak, and I was sort of like, I could see through certain patterns, and I was like, you know what? This atheism thing, there's too much faith in that for me, and I still think it's true. I think that just there's nothing at all. It seems to me the exact same level of hubris for me as saying there definitely is. I have no doubt there's definitely a thing. That's my experience. So I was like, I'm an agnostic. I don't know. Hey, what do I know? Blah, blah, blah. The thing that I came to find out in the program was that, actually, I was functionally an atheist, because while I believed in my brain that, okay, there might be some other thing, and, you know, he's not going to judge me if I don't worship him, whatever, I took every one of my actions as though there was no God. Every day, right? So there's this intellectual thing where I can't be an atheist because that's ridiculous, but I take every action as though there's no God, right? Real agnosticism, I realize now, would mean that I would take half of my actions, half the time, as though there is something guiding me, and I would be willing to do that. Right, and that's real agnosticism. That's fucking hard. And I did not have that kind of, you know, wherewithal when I was a kid. I was just like, nah, whatever. Right? And I think that that's the thing that I found in the program. If the God thing scares you, you do not actually need to believe in God in order to do this program. My old grand sponsor, everyone's heard me say this, was a rabid atheist. He used to say, you know, God doesn't exist. When the book says, I'm talking about the big book, when the big book says kneel down and pray, I kneel down and pray. Pray to what? Pray to nothing, because you're all sheep, right? That's how we talk to people. And it worked. And he had this awakening, right? And that is a testament to the power of the program. He said he treated it like programming a VCR. If anyone doesn't know, a VCR is this thing. So anyway, but. When the old programming was like, you hold one button down for 5 seconds, and you hold another one, and you click, and it made no sense at all, but suddenly you'd be recording, you know, Miami Vice or whatever was playing when VCRs were around. So he said he did it like programming a VCR. So he would just do the things, and it would have this effect. And that is a radical way to understand what we have here in the program, that this works, even if you don't believe. And I just want to say that for me, with my sponsees, when I go through the steps and we get to the parts where it's, you know, there's a lot of God talk and everything, I say it's really important that you're willing to believe at this point. And for if you're having a hard time with the God thing, it actually is fine if you don't believe. But there, I don't know a way. Maybe there is a way. I don't know a way that you could do this without being willing. And keep in mind, thank you. Keep in mind, willing just means hypothetically. Is it possible there could be this thing that's bigger than me that could restore me to sanity? Is that on paper possible? Almost, I don't know anyone who can't be like, yeah, okay, on paper. I mean, it's ridiculous, Superman, whatever. But like, okay, that's fine. And that is a type of openness and faith. That's enough to move forward in the process. I moved to New York. I'm still in my story, isn't that funny? So I moved to New York, 2000, right after 9/11, and I was like, it was so dark. I like moved to New York, and I always had these like lines in the sand. I'll never cross this line. I'll never cross that line. And the line I realized later actually was what if it's in the room. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm not going to cross that line. Oh, it's in the room. Okay. You know what I mean? And then like whatever it was, like okay, never mind that rule in my head. Like oh, it's there. And so there are certain drugs that I've never done, and it's just been that they've never been in the room. So a friend of mine, my dad was a big crackhead, and a friend of mine was like, you know, everyone in New York does cocaine. I was like, oh, really? Like, apparently not, right? Maybe you do. But everyone in New York does cocaine. So I was like, oh, I guess I have to do cocaine. And so that's what I did. I, you know, started using coke instead of blah, blah, blah. And it's, I heard a newcomer say once, I love the coke part of people's stories because that means it's going to be over soon. And what that also means, right? What that also means is newcomers are hungry for the part where it gets better. The part where it gets better, right? That's the part, you know? And I just, so I came here, I came in, and the one thing I had left was I could tell if people were lying or not. That was like, it's a good junkie skill to have. Are you lying? You lying? And the people sat, you know, at the whatever in the meeting, and the people said, I've had what you have and I don't have it anymore, and I did these things. They pointed at the invisible steps and invisible traditions that we have hung here, and they said, I've done these things and now my life is different and I don't feel that pain anymore. And I believed them. I could tell they weren't lying, and I was lucky enough to have dove into the program with both feet. And that process has been unbelievable. And God willing, next month, hopefully, I'll have 9 years. But that's not here now, so I'm hoping I will. And the transformation has been really, really radical. And something I just want to talk about, just like on a personal note, is I'm doing this big four step right now, really deep. And the thing that I'm realizing, I just want to say something that's personal enough, because this is my home group, personal enough that it's not just, you know, talking about stuff. I realize I'm terrible at making human connections. Really bad. I'm able to connect with people really suddenly and quickly, and I can do that thing, and then it just sort of falls apart. I don't have the kinds of friends that I see a lot of people have. This is me personally. This is not like a universal. This is something I'm realizing, right? The type of friends that I have, which is awesome, and I trust me, I love my friends, is we talk every few months. Or we'll hang out, well, let's get food, and blah, 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 and have these really strong, beautiful connections with people. And that's really powerful. But in this other way, I find that I push people away. And I want to be part of something, and I want to say, fuck you too. And that's that against, and I still have that. And that's something I realized 3 days ago, right? Through doing a four step. And I was so alienated and isolated and suffering when I came in here that to be in a place where I'm now looking at how to create bonds that are going to last a lifetime, or how to develop the bonds that I already have, or how to build a relationship, if that's not something that's miraculous, like I don't know what we call that. For me. And I think the thing is that I just hope people know, if you're new, how lucky we are, right? Because The way that we recover is by connecting with other alcoholics about recovery in AA, right? It could have been magically that the way we recover is by talking to dogs in the woods in trees, right? And we'd be in so much pain, we'd be like, fuck it. We're up in the tree talking to the dog, right? And we'd be like, I'll do it. But the thing that we have to do is to connect with other human beings and have a spiritual awakening. That's not a bad fucking deal. I think it's worth it. And for me, Alcoholics Anonymous and this process is the most important thing that's ever happened in my life. And people say they're grateful to be alcoholics. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade this process and what I've been through and my alcoholism for being a non-alcoholic. Not by a fucking long shot. Not anymore. And I just want to say that if, the last thing I'll say, maybe, is that my role here is to be able to transmit this, transmit what happens here. It's not a self-help program, it's a help others program. We come here, we help as many people as we can, and then there's a wash of help. There's help for all of us, right? And that's how the process works. If you don't have a sponsor, if your sponsor doesn't do the steps, I don't know why they call themselves a sponsor. I have no idea what that is. A sponsor isn't, I don't know what that means. Whatever your wall of willingness is now, right? If you're brand new, if you have 7 years, we all have a wall of willingness. We're right up at that thing, right? And my job as a sponsor is to find my sponsee's wall of willingness and help them through it using the tools of the program. If you have a wall of willingness, wherever you are, we all have it, right? Be clear about it. Raise your hands. I have this wall of willingness. How do I apply the tools of this program? Or here's how I'm applying the tools of this program to get over X, Y, or Z. Talk about that. And that's the community that we can have here. And I think that I get this feeling like I never want to die. I just want this life of pain and suffering and happiness and joy. I just want it to go on and on because it keeps getting richer. And the times when it gets richer are the times when I surrender myself to this program and allow it to do its job and work for it and have it work through me. And that's the most powerful experience I've ever had in my life. And I thank you very much. Thanks.